coming to you live from inside the globe, perched high atop the Bugle Planet building in sunny Gotham City. It's Hey Kids Comics with two guys who are always ready to seduce the innocent, your hosts, Andrew Farmer and the Jedi Cole Houston. And now it's time for Hey Kids Comics.
Here we go. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Hey Kids Comics, issue 192, issue 3, dead center in the story arc. You know what we say about that? The third one is the humdinger. It's all downhill after this, guys, so about halfway through this issue, this is when we fall off the precipice and start rolling downhill.
You know what's coming.
I am, of course, Andrew Farmer, with me as always, the Jedi Cole Houston, and very blessed... Go ahead, Cole.
Absolutely. We have a special guest tonight for Two-Face the Nation.
Oh, it got renamed. I like it.
Yeah. Tonight on Two-Face the Nation. We're not talking to anyone. Coin says no.
Coin says no. I got this Chris Matthews Two-Face image in my head.
I just say, like, you know, something in the 70s with Two-Face, and Henry Kissinger, what, they come all this way, you know, from Washington. He was just like, this is it? What's the Meshuggah now? Anyway.
I just like the idea that, like, halfway through the interview, he just flips the coin and says, no, now we're going to turn it over to the councilman from Minnesota. Like, no. Just like, the coin said no, we're switching.
Yeah, but that's just the McLaughlin report, so don't.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
Yeah, it turns out
Crossfire.
The McLaughlin report was just Two-Face and heavy makeup.
Half heavy makeup, just one side.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it was all known as One-Face.
That's the worst character.
I think One-Face was from the Muggerville 7.
He was. It was the most boring character. He was a district attorney that was just a district attorney. Yeah. Somebody call One-Face, we need a warrant. And he would just answer the phone and... give you a warrant and then hang up the phone.
That's right.
Boring. So who do we have on the show tonight? Damn it, starting already.
The very rare artifact, the one-sided coin.
It broke the laws of physics.
That's how he got into the superhero community, was he had the one-sided coin.
They're like, he has to be able to do something. Yeah. No.
We have got to introduce our guest, but let me see if I put the old coin here. And I'm not Two-Faced, so I'm going to go for it anyway.
Yeah.
Welcome, Steve McCauley, old friend and colleague and purveyor of probably even more comic knowledge from the old days than I have.
How many collected years of comic book knowledge do we have at the table right now? That's what I'm curious of.
Wow.
I started collecting right after the Superman the movie came out.
Oh, okay.
Which would have been 78. So.
Which begs the question, can you read his mind?
Do you know what it is you do to me?
Damn it. You guys need to take this on the road. Busted truck.
That's right. Shatner reading it.
So we probably
I would go pay money for.
We probably have 90 years of comic book knowledge.
Yeah, I'm probably getting close to 100, but not quite.
Yeah. And tonight we're going to give you none of that.
Absolutely. Or something, depending on how we feel.
When we discuss Two-Face. If you've paid attention, I don't blame you if you haven't, but if you paid attention to the last couple issues of Hey Kids Comics, we're right in the middle of a story arc called Roguish Eyes, which, again, spur out of Cole and I's insidious brain hive mind that we put together.
That's right.
But the first issue was on the Riddler.
Swarms. Oh, sorry.
The first issue was on the Riddler. Very serious. We took it very well. We really explored the depths of the character. The second issue was on the Penguin. Not so much.
Yeah, it was sort of like drunk history for Hey Kids Comics.
It was! And sadly enough, the only one of us that drank was the one that doesn't really drink. Like, Eddie went toe-to-toe with a bottle of red wine and came out with...
Eddie was seriously channeling you. I was impressed.
I was very happy that I now know that I can hand off the reins of that particular aspect of my life to Eddie. And tonight, who are we talking about, Cole?
We are talking about a character that, in fact, Somebody who complains all the time, or used to complain a lot, Russell, the Toyminator King, used to complain that most everything I said was a reference, and that was solely because he hadn't met Steve yet, in which case everything we both said was a reference, be it from a movie, television show, comic, book, what have you, or from real life.
Life skills.
Yes, indeed. And then, ultimately, the very person who complained about another reference became another reference, as did a little tale he told that I probably, you know, if you've listened to this show from the beginning or nearly anything else I've done, every now and again, some reason comes up to retell that. So just sit back, relax, let others enjoy it for the first time.
It's a free show.
Yeah. Russell was making custom figures. He found a Dick Tracy figurine, very limited articulation, and decided what it needed to really be was Two-Face. So he painted half the costume in black. And
at the time, I don't know that there was a Two-Face. There might have been a Batman animated Two-Face out.
Yeah, there really was.
I guess the Tommy Lee Jones.
Yeah, that may have been out by then.
We said Two-Face. I don't know what that was, but I'm still not sure it was Two-Face.
Yeah, that was actually what that was a marketing ploy to get Two-Face toothpaste out on the market.
Damn it.
It was like AIM, but just with two colors.
Damn it.
Yeah. So, and it didn't sell very well because one of the colors was sort of this fleshy kind of peach color.
How weird was that choice, by the way? That color, who signed off on that color scheme? That's what I want to know. Who saw that and said, yeah, that's what Two-Face looks like.
I guess they just didn't want to go green. And
yeah, because at the time, the character in the comics was half flesh, half green.
It was a very lime green as well, because it really showed his season, I think, more than any
showed
other color.
Showed his season? Jesus. Maybe he's bored with it. Maybe it was acid.
Who knows?
Well, he found out at Clinique. Yeah.
He works at the powder counter at Sephora now.
That's right. And then he did that big ramp, and he flipped the coin and then stopped the ramp. But anyway, he made this figurine of Two-Face out of this Dick Tracy figure and painted the one side the suit in one color and the other side in another, and used some, you know, being Russell, he used like some kind of wall spackle to mess up half the face and everything. So anyway, he would carry that around the toy shows and to the flea market and stuff. And one day he's out selling at the flea market, and these couple of guys come by and they're looking at stuff. One guy picks this up and he's like kind of looking at it. His friend says, he's like, who's this? His friend says, well, that's Two-Face. The guy looked at it a second and puts it back down. I wish I was Two-Face. Which has become one of my favorite non-comic comic book stories ever. Because the mind boggles.
Yeah, what's the speculation on...
Steve knows this personal reference about the time we were going somewhere with my dad, and he'd gone to the 7-Eleven, came out and said this guy at the counter was talking to the clerk, and the clerk noticed a pine tree that had been growing behind a building across the street. He goes, I never noticed there was a pine tree there. And the guy said, how do you tell a pine tree from any other kind of tree? And I thought, up to a point, that was the stupidest thing I've ever heard anyone say. It was supplanted beautifully by I wish I was Two-Face.
But the thing is, there's so much to unpack in that simple sentence, in that non-compound, basic, no-need-to-diagram sentence, I wish I was Two-Face. So much to unpack in there. Like, does he wish he looked like Two-Face?
Does he wish he had been burned by acid?
Yeah,
right.
Obviously, he didn't know enough about the character to realize the ramifications. But does he really want to be disfigured on half of his face?
Maybe
he was just wanting the suit.
Oh, now that's true. It could have been a fashion statement. But it almost sounds like something you would hear on, like, you know, and Herb Tolleson said, I wish I was Two-Face.
And it's officially
a
Hey Kids Comics show. We've now had our Garrison Keillor impression. No, but
all the villains are two-faced.
Does he think he's already like fully disfigured to the point where maybe being half disfigured would?
So maybe I had encountered.
I think that would have made it into the story.
But like, does he just see himself that way? Like, there's so much. I would love to find the Wish I Was Two-Faced guy as much as I would love to find the guy, the alligator wrestler Gambit guy, so that we could have a show about these things. Like a legitimate, like, damn, I wish that we had that information. But much like, you know who else I think probably says, I wish I was Two-Faced?
I can't remember his last name.
We're going to find him. I still have it on record that I want to find the Gambit guy. We know enough people in the DFW area that are artists that we can track down the Gambit guy. I have faith in that. But the other person who might say, I wish I was Two-Faced, is actually Two-Face. Because he's crazy.
Well, you know, and the thing about it is, had I been there, I would have told the guy, you know, you could wish you were Two-Faced in one hand. That's
and pour acid on the other.
Right.
Right. That's what you have to tell people in that case. I wish I was two hands. It's actually simply worse than one face.
Two hands.
Two hands.
One face and his partner, two hands. So what? So in the, you know, in issues past of the Roguish Eye story arc, we've talked about how, you know, the Riddler kind of is there to challenge Batman intellectually in a non-humanizing, one-upping kind of thresholdy, you know, hero's journey.
Sphinx on the hero's journey.
Right. How the Penguin kind of represents a different threshold, kind of the business acumen, how he challenges Bruce Wayne to in a pure detective way, almost, that we don't get a lot in the costumed heroes with powers, or at least with enough crazy to have powers. what do we think Two-Face falls into the Batman challenge, you know, pie chart? The Venn diagram.
Well, speaking as a comic reader, I would think that it looks to me that it represents Bruce's or Batman's justice, but then the other side of the coin being how far do you go in pursuit of justice?
Right.
Oh,
and I like the other side of the coin in there, too. That was nice. Steve, you're a professional, and I want to compliment you on that transition.
Yes, indeed. Because I was thinking more of the obvious, the literal, the dichotomy, the Bruce Wayne Batman. But you bring an interesting point is, you know, at what point do you flip that coin and push the justice too far?
But I think it speaks to both, right? Where you would have, it is the duality of good versus evil in one man that Bruce has to be confronted with. Not only that, but somebody that at some point in Bruce's past or in Batman's past, he considered an ally in his war against crime. Right?
Right,
he was the face. He could be the face of Batman, you know, in the actual justice system, where Batman could be, you know, you could be Harvey Dent on the streets and Batman in the sheets. Whereas,
wow.
yeah, just, I'm going for it, and you know, and then to be confronted with your nature, in the form of one man that you once considered a compatriot, in your battle for justice, has to be mentally debilitating when you meet up with this guy in person and you think, this could be me. Is this me? At what point does this become me?
Yeah, it is the kind of the shattered mirror concept, really.
And, all in one person.
Yes. And also you have that kind of, because Harvey Dent was a former colleague, it almost becomes like this kind of Walking Dead dynamic where you have, you know, you encounter somebody as a zombie that you knew in life.
Right.
You know, this is a unique situation for Bruce under the cowl, because here's somebody he knew as Bruce Wayne and somebody he knew as Batman. And depending on if you're, you know, you're approaching from his left, you might not, you know, you might have that little twinge there where you've forgotten that if he turns and says, hey, Batman, you know, then all of a sudden you're like, oh, I forgot.
There's a really cool story that I, when doing the research, because I honestly, I know Two-Face, as a character, and of course I've read Two-Face and things like Long Halloween and Hush, and you know, the stories that kind of incorporate all of the Rogues Gallery, but I don't think I've really have any standout Two-Face stories that I've read that are, you know, where Two-Face is the main antagonist of the story arc. But in my research, I found a book that I'm going to read that I haven't read, which is Arkham Asylum, A Serious House on Serious Earth, which is a lot of kind of the referential points for the video games, I guess, came from there, and it's supposed to be a very good story overall. But in Arkham, the doctors of Arkham ended up giving to wean him off, to try to bring him into his own, so he wouldn't have to rely on this binary decision making process that he has. They gave him a die, that's like a 6-sided dice, eventually graduating him up to a tarot deck, so that you know, there were more decisions, so he would learn that there are more options than just the two, you know, trying to wean him out. But he became so locked into that, he's so crazy that he couldn't make any decisions at that point. And the only way to break him out of that, like, he wouldn't go to the bathroom, he wouldn't eat, he wouldn't move without consulting a tarot deck, which there are so many combinations therein that he gets locked inside of himself and can't do anything, was Batman actually returning the coin to him. So showing him a certain level of mercy.
Yes.
Does that, do you think that the, and it's often written that way. I think Batman has sort of a soft spot for Harvey Dent, and it's not just because he played Lando Calrissian, right? Like,
yeah, don't get me started on movie casting. We can talk about that later.
The worst cast character just across the board in any sense has been poor, with the exception of the latest
Aaron Eckhart.
Yeah, Aaron Eckhart. With the exception of that, just the most poorly casted character across time and space.
Andrew, the one story that I guess I keep coming back to on Two-Face, which shows everything we've actually been talking about, is from Frank Miller's The Dark Knight Returns.
Yes.
Because the whole first issue, Two-Face is the villain, and Bruce has actually paid for his surgery and therapy.
That's right.
And so he has actually been cured, in quotes, but it turns out that the psychosis was there all along.
Right.
And even though he's no longer scarred, he still is a villain.
He's just pretty.
I'd forgotten about that. Yeah, he'd been made effectively one face. So.
Exactly. He became one face, but still inside he was two face. But that's okay.
Well, so another question is, and the other way that the big story, I think, for me recently that incorporated Two-Face was when Batman got time bulleted and, you know, the general decision in Gotham was that there needed to be a Batman. There couldn't be that void. So there was the battle for the cowl, which is gimmicky, but was also a really cool kind of story. And one of the Batman that rose from, you know, that rose to the occasion was Two-Face. But he had, you know, guns, and he had a weird costume that was half, you know, half red and half blue. Like, it was a really...
He actually had one of the coolest costumes out of that whole storyline.
Oh, absolutely.
And apparently DC Direct did an action figure of it, and every now and again a DC Direct line would just not get ordered at retail.
Yeah.
Because that was one of those that just never... I mean, if you can find it, people want $80 or $90 for the damn thing.
Right. Mm. So what part of the psychosis, much like all of the villains, right? We've discussed this. The Riddler obviously wants to trump Batman's intelligence, you know, to the point where it's its own level. It became its own psychosis. It became an entity in and of itself that somebody's finally challenged, you know, and there's that, you know, that battle of steps to get better. The Penguin obviously is trying to beat Batman at his own game when it comes to the criminal empire. What part of Two-Face do you think wants to be? Do you think he is aspiring to be that crime fighter at some level, aspiring to see that sense of justice upheld at some level, and just that psychotic break in him will not allow him to get there? Like, is that, how does that play out for you guys?
Well, I think what's interesting personally with Two-Face, an observation that occurred to me was that he, the psychosis is literally perched on the head of a pen. It's like having the coin, because he represents that the scales of justice in a way, in that, you know, being a former DA, but technically he is a neutral. Two-Face is actually the most neutral character in the entire Batman Rogues Gallery because he's not in it for anything specifically. He's driven by this need. He's like on this psychological fulcrum, and the coin flip decides which side of the scale gets the weight.
Right.
But deep down, he is the stand upon which those two arms rest, and the scales are just weighted by virtue of where the coin lands.
But it's also a black and white issue for Harvey, for Two-Face. It's one outcome if the coin flips this way, and it's another outcome if it flips the other way. There's two choices. It's a dual dichotomy, good,
yeah,
evil.
Yeah, very binary
black,
sort of
white
thinking.
Yes.
So he really, it's hard to say that he could technically look at anything as having a real path, because every decision, it becomes like sort of that argument of Infinite Earths, where every decision sets its own course.
Right.
As you can imagine from the Infinite Earth theorem, Two-Face screws that up royal, because every time he makes a decision, it exponentially adds a number of new worlds into the dimensions, because they have to, you know, all the other possible outcomes have to be addressed. And so Two-Face is single-handedly responsible for the Infinite Earths.
Well, and there's
yeah, pretty deep stuff.
Damn.
There.
Thought it was Krona.
I think we can do a whole issue on this. There's another side to Two-Face, though, that when we're talking about him, he's not just a pain in the ass for Batman, right? He's also a pain in the ass for every other rogue
that
would ever want to work with him, right? Like, he can't hold the key to anything. Like, you can work with the Riddler. He's annoying as hell to work with, but you can work with the Riddler. You can work with the Penguin if you're willing to pay him for his henchmen or whatever it might be. You can work
with the Riddler. It might take you a week to figure out where you put your car keys.
Right. If you can work with Selina Kyle, you can work with the Killer Moth, you can work with, you know, Firebug, you can work with any of them except Two-Face. Because if it's down to the granular level where if you ask Two-Face where he wants to grab a burger tonight, it's going to be 4 hours before you get an answer, because he's going to flip that coin.
No, but that's he actually will give you an answer right away. No, I'm not having burgers. Yes, I am having burgers.
Right. It's a choose-your-own-adventure in his own head.
Yeah.
If you continually get the scarred side, it may be 4 hours before you both sit down at the Thai restaurant.
That's true.
Then you realize, well, we're not going to be eating here because the Joker shot everybody.
Right. The fish is tainted. That's right. Can we get sushi? Nope, Joker's in town. No, but I can just imagine him standing there like, are you ready to go? No. Are you ready to go? No. Are you ready to go? No. Are you ready to go? Yes. You know, do we need to stop? No. Do we need to stop? No. Do we need to stop? Yes. Do we need to? Yeah, it's just like, God.
The worst thing is you one time let him drive, and you, never again.
The key to managing Two-Face is to not ask him questions, right? Is to couch everything in, like, telling him exactly what's going to happen. Okay. Harvey, we're going to this restaurant. You're going to order this. You're going to send it back once because it's not done the way you want it to. You're going to get it back. You're going to eat it. We're going to go rent a movie. We're not going to talk about what movie we're going to rent. We're going to do or give him a menu 4 days in advance and have him write it all down and hand it back to you. That would be the other way to go.
And then when you're ready to go, he's like, no.
Exactly. Like, he's a really interesting character that's very hard to unpack, because I think the most important thing that it represents for Batman is, and we touched on this earlier, like when we're looking at the challenges to Batman and what Batman sees, I think it is the duality of justice. Like how far do you go before it's too far? And with Two-Face, that's easily answerable, right? Because you just flip a coin. With Batman, he's got to consider all of the things that make him Batman. He has to have that spotlight on the right side of the stage monologue that with the audience about all the things that have happened since, you know, Zack Snyder killed his mom with the pearl eating gun, up to the point where he, you know, he fell through whatever cellar he was in, up to the point, you know, and he has to run through that entire litany of things that led him up there so that he can look away from the audience and say, no, not today. Today's not the day you break the bat. And then, you know, go back to just punching people in the face. Whereas Two-Face, that riddle is solved very quickly. Just boop, and then done, and then yes, I'm going to shoot this guy in the face, and you shoot him in the face, and then he's dead, right?
Well, then, like, you know, you move forward into, like, thank goodness DC didn't take the bait from Marvel with 2099 and try to, like, hey, let's have, you know, versions of all our characters in the future.
But they do!
Because you would wind up with a character called D20.
I will. That's the Muggerville 7 version of Two-Face.
Right. He's just, there's this whole, then you have to get this, his carry on this manual so he can consult it, and, you know.
Oh, no, you're not thinking big enough, Cole. That may be the, you know, the Two-Face of the 80s, but now it would be RNG, random number generator.
Yes, right, it would be an app on a phone that he would have to hit.
Yeah, that's right. Then he'd have to go to the website and figure out what that translates into.
No, I'm trying to find it because
it's sushi.
In Batman, in
437221 equals sushi. Who knew?
Who knew? In Batman Beyond, there was a Two-Face. I don't know how they. And that's the fun. That's the part that cracks me up about any of these future universes.
Oh, that's right. It was bifacial.
Damn it. I can't. That's our show, ladies and gentlemen. We'll see you next week. That is a horrible joke. It's the worst. No, so in Batman Beyond, Harvey Dent is somehow still alive. How are these guys still alive? Like, the 2099 Marvel.
Well, apparently, the Lazarus Pit got turned into Lazarus Pills.
Right, it got entered into the water supply.
Bill just hands out to all these old friends.
It was in a...
Yeah, you're a detective. Jeez, I've lived a lot longer than I want to. I'm seriously, tomorrow I'm putting a bullet in my head.
But he's reformed in Batman Beyond. So he's back to being Harvey Dent instead of Two-Face. But how do these... That's the thing that... Is it because of mythology? Okay, so here's a question that's not about Two-Face at all.
Okay.
But it's something that I've been wondering, and I started wondering it back when, you know, we had Ravage 2099 and Punisher 2099 and Doom 29 Ghost Rider.
I just wonder why we didn't have Ravage whatever year that was. Why didn't we
right,
have, like,
1993? Yeah, exactly. Because it didn't work in 2099. It's certainly not going to work now.
Yeah, that's true.
But why is it mythology that makes, in your opinion, why would you have a Hulk 2099? Why would you have a Punisher 2099? Why do you have a Spider-Man 2099, or even, you know, your Batman Beyonds, or your Justice League Beyonds, or whatever it is?
I can give you a Batman Beyond.
Please, I would love
I
it if you
maybe
did.
Give you one 2099 throw, you know, forward.
Mm-hmm.
I maybe X-Men 2099 would be the one I'd most likely give you, but I'd more likely give you Avengers 2099, which you didn't have. And I say that because I can give you in the future a tribute to the past.
Right.
You want to embody this largely mythological ideal of what we think these guys were all about, and we can make that happen. But, you know, when you have everybody 2099, you're stepping outside of the tribute band.
Yes, you are. Yes. When you have Vulture 2099, like, he was 2099 in 1963. Do we really need a Vulture in 2099? And they've done, I'm not going to say they didn't pull a few cool rabbits out of the hat to make it work. There were some really cool things that they did. I'm not going to say that they didn't. But overall, it's just like, why? Who's this for? You know, this isn't – who are you doing this for? But regardless, I digress. Back to Two-Face. Can anybody think of any – and there are a ton. So I'm putting this out there because I want to know what you guys come up with. Pop culture or historical – tie-ins, back-ends to the idea of Two-Face? Like we talked about,
the name itself comes from, you know, somebody who says one thing and does another, or talks to about somebody behind their back. So I mean, you've actually got that thread of Two-Face, a two-faced person, who does. So you have that. I guess the only other one I can think of right off the bat would be Janice from.
Yes,
I was actually looking
Greek
at Janice
mythology
myself. Because
I don't know the story. I just know.
I actually got curious, and I was literally headed that way myself. And I was just reading about the god, as expressed in the mythos in the ancient sources, that he seems to be presiding over the beginnings of things and causes actions. So in a way, you do have that sort of causality.
Right. Right.
Because you have that, you know, the god literally stands at that precipice between yes or no, black or white, beginning or ending, life or death.
So Frank Gorshin from the original series is what you're talking about right now.
Well, but he's black on one side and white on the other.
Yes, indeed. I mean, if you want to get technical about it, you have to watch out for those with stars upon Mars.
I want to go back to something that Steve said for a second. I'm not discounting anything you just said, but something occurred.
You can discount the Dr. Seuss reference.
Something occurred to me during my research, because when I learn way too much about these characters when I'm doing the research, and my brain goes to some really interesting places that I wish it wouldn't sometimes. But you said the name means, you know, to speak out of one side of your mouth. Well, you know, you're two-faced. You say one thing, you mean one thing, you say another, you say one thing to one person, you say something to another. When we tie that back to his profession and the time at which he actually reached popularity, like he was being used more, which was the late 60s, early 70s, was when he really kind of started to be used as a villain on a more regular basis. He had a couple instances where they used him, where Finger and Kane used him early on, and then a couple more kind of in the 50s. Nothing substantial. How do you think that the character referentially ties back to political satire?
I certainly think that there must have been something in making him a political figure. Make him an elected official.
Right.
Because the Two-Face character could have been disfigured in 100 different ways. But the fact that he was, you know, the criminal prosecutor who becomes a criminal, then speaks to, you know, is this meant to be the intrinsic nature of politics that it turns people to...
Right, exactly. It turns
into the very thing they're supposed to be fighting against, or...
Well, and I can imagine a scenario where, you know, somebody, whether it be, you know, Finger Kane or whoever it was, when they brought him, when this idea really got brought to the forefront, is reading a paper about, you know, a district attorney in New York, or, you know, a police captain or whatever, and the term Two-Face is used in the copy, and that light bulb goes off, like, oh, holy crap, we've got this. This is literally something we can do. We've got this in our back catalog. Let's bring him out. We'll make him a corrupt politician, but we'll take it one step further and make him a crazy sociopathic politician that it seems like he's doing what all of our elected officials are doing, which is making these decisions on a toss of a coin. And, you know, and what does that mean for Gotham when we take it to that weird mythological level, that mythological tier versus reality? Do you think that plays in at all? I think it does. I think it has to, right, in some of the storylines.
Oh, absolutely. At least, you know, to a large degree, I think it is meant to represent that coin flip that often determines very important decisions.
Steve, are you out there?
I am. I was just thinking along the lines of corrupt officials, because you had that, you know, in spades, I guess, in the 2030s. In New York. So I had not ever sort of tied his profession, other than the fact that it's now justice perverted rather than, you know, actually tying it back to historical trends at the time.
We made Steve think about things. That's what happened.
We tried to
make
me
think.
I made you think about things.
Meteor shit.
Damn it. Creepshow. Creepshow reference.
Yeah, but there was actually one of the lines in the Wikipedia article. I just had to consult the Wikipedia because it I needed a quick fix on Janus as a god. But this one line really struck me in the context of what we're talking about. He represented the middle ground between barbarism and civilization.
Mm.
Rural and urban space, youth and adulthood, it goes on to say. But that barbarism and civilization, you literally have that dichotomy writ large on the face of Harvey Dent. You know, speaking of the casting of Billy Dee Williams in, oh gosh, drawing a blank.
Batman.
What's his name's Batman?
Tim Burton.
Tim Burton's Batman. I actually thought that was some pretty brilliant casting. In the same way, I thought Tommy Lee Jones, while he is a great actor, was very poor casting as Two-Face, because casting Billy Dee Williams showed that Burton understood that part of the psychology of Harvey Dent is he needs to be a beautiful man.
Right.
You need to have a very handsome, literally very beautiful man become disfigured on one side, because that gives you a sharper contrast than mud fence and muddier fence.
I love the fact that we now have the open acknowledgement that Cole believes that Billy Dee Williams is a beautiful man.
Hey, Billy Dee Williams knows that Billy Dee Williams
is. I mean, nobody knows better than Billy Dee Williams that Billy Dee Williams is a beautiful man.
Ripping off him. So if you haven't recognized that Billy Dee Williams is a beautiful man before now, that's your misfortune.
So yeah,
you shut your mouth. Billy Dee Williams is a saint.
Billy Dee Williams walks like a titan across this land.
That's right.
A travesty that he was not in A Force Awakens.
Same way it was a travesty that Burt Ward and Adam West and Tim Burton's Batman.
It was the same way. Absolutely. It was a travesty they made Burt Ward ride that little Robin ottoman on wheels around.
The little knee scooter of death.
Yes. So while we're here, right, since we've found ourselves here, let's talk about some of the Two-Face casting, live action, cartoony type stuff that's out there. Like for instance, I didn't know that Clint Eastwood was considered to be cast in the role of Two-Face in the 60s.
I did not know that either.
In the 60s Batman TV show, which would have been amazing.
Yes, indeed.
You want to talk about and he didn't even have to have any makeup applied. I'm pretty sure he has the ability to. I've seen it in the El Torino movie where he can make just the right side of his face go apparently numb
it becomes the Coke can in the Golden Child.
Damn
just
it!
Just on half of his face, it just self crumples. Are you putting your head around that one?
You are like the lowest stakes Neil deGrasse Tyson, Cole.
Imagine, if you will, a Coke can.
Self.
God damn it. I do like the kid. I say the kid. He's probably just a little younger than me. That they have cast in the Gotham TV show. He's pretty good. He's a beautiful man. Young. Virile.
Fetching Harvey Dent. And that's what you need. They're casting exactly to the type. What's interesting, when we were working on this show ahead of time, a little behind the scenes, when Andy first brought up the idea of, you know, wouldn't it be great if we could find a direct corollary to Two-Face and some politician of the day, or some actual, you know, God forbid, an actual district attorney of the day who was corrupt or what have you. And one of the things I pointed out just off the top of my head knowledge was, at one point I was reading about Two-Face somewhere, and this author brought up the fact that there was a Dick Tracy villain, which may actually predate Two-Face, called Half and Half.
loved his creamer.
He did. He, oddly enough, dairy allergy. It was really tough for him. That was his.
Sometimes it was cream. Sometimes it
lactose
was
lactose intolerant.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, that drove him mad. But I actually researched Half and Half, and I found an image of his origin where a chemical spill from a tanker truck, he was unconscious laying on his side. So it was like, oh my God, it's Aaron Eckhart in The Dark Knight.
Right.
Like, holy crap, they steal it from Dick Tracy. Minus the fire, but still.
Could also be Valance from Star Wars comic.
Oh, ow.
Exactly half his body got blown away.
So they replaced it with half a robot. So he hated hated droids. Sort of like Will Smith in iRobot.
I love the fact that the animated Two-Face, for the most part, has been voiced for the last couple years by TV's Richard Mull.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I can't think of a better voice than Bull from Night Court. Also, one or two times...
Or an acolyte of Bubba Love from Mork and Mindy, if you...
Right.
If your Mork and Mindy knowledge is that encyclopedic.
Wow. Well, here's some knowledge for you.
With
also,
John Larroquette on the same episode, no less.
Also voiced by one James Remar. Does that name ring a bell? Does Ajax from the Warriors ring a bell?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. God
now
damn it.
I'm going to come out and play.
Goddamn Ajax. Yeah, but
it was the Warriors. Ajax was the one who favored Bit of Honey.
Yes. Maybe the only one.
That was like the wimpiest candy in the world.
What do you think?
Oddly enough, much like Reese's Penis, Reese's Pieces, Reese's Penis for that matter.
Reese's Penis.
Reese's Pieces.
Reese's. What was it? Wait. What was the name of our? What was the name of our heroes? Our Grecian hero's journey character, Reese's Pieces. Was that?
Oh, that's right. Reese's Theseus.
Reese's Theseus.
But they. But Bit of Honey sales skyrocketed after Warriors.
So let me ask you this. The world of the Warriors, what do you think their dentistry
was like? I don't
think
Bit of Honey sales ever skyrocketed.
Right.
Well, you went from selling one Bit of Honey a year.
Oh, true.
Three per annum was a huge increase.
What do you think dentistry in the world of the Warriors looked like? Because if he was getting down on that Bit of Honey, he had no teeth left. Just ripping out fillings left and right.
As someone who made the mistake in the 70s of buying a Bit of Honey, that was like...
Well, I only got it for Halloween. I never got it any other time.
That was the worst 30 cents I ever spent in my life. Damn it!
So
I listened to Dad and got a Chico stick.
Cowtail, damn it. Get a cowtail.
Yeah, but Chico stick, according to my dad, has food value.
Does it?
Well, then get a Butterfinger and wrap it in chocolate.
Yeah.
So let's get to the nitty gritty of the casting.
I'm sorry, I'm still hurting from Bit of Honey.
Yeah, and you mentioned it earlier, but where does anyone get off casting Tommy Lee Jones as Two-Face?
I think Two-Face himself did that casting.
Right. There was definitely a coin flip involved in casting Tommy Lee Jones as Two-Face.
Well, I guess he was probably hot from The Fugitive, right?
He
had done such a great job in that. I think he won an Oscar for it.
How does that translate? How do you see The Fugitive?
I think they were looking for someone who could be bigger
than... But then
than
again,
the
it was Schumacher, so who knows what he was getting.
The Jim Shooter level of cocaine that was involved in the creation of that movie.
But it was probably like, oh, you know what, that one movie I saw with the guy that they got away from jail? The Fugitive? No, it was like that, though. The guy that had the hen house line, get him. Don't tell him it's The Fugitive. Just pretend you don't know what movie you were in.
I'm cleared,
so I'm on board.
I want to know the story.
Barnett.
I really want to know the story of how he was cast. Like, that's what I really want to know is, oh, here you go. So this is from Schumacher, okay? I always wanted Tommy Lee Jones. I didn't consider Billy Dee Williams for the role because I think he's a hero. I always see him like Clark Gable. I had just finished working with Tommy Lee Jones on The Client, and I thought he'd be a great Harvey Dent. Because The Client is definitely the, you know, the double doors that you want to walk through to become Two-Face.
Well, I guess, you know, The Client, let's see, Harvey Dent's in Law. The Client was about law. There you go. We're done.
There you go. Boom.
And
the movie.
Boom. You're done. Boom. You're done.
All right. Sorry. I just get the guy that was in the movie, the last movie you were going, oh, get out of here, old Hollywood.
Oh, that's right. Oh, God. Yeah, that's awful. That shouldn't be, that should never be a thing. There's one other thing. Okay, so we're getting up to bumping against it. So when we, there's one thing that I think we haven't touched on when it comes to Two-Face, that, and that would be the that side of his face. Never touch that side of his face. It's gross.
Yeah.
It's,
Oh, no.
Gruesome.
Oh, no.
I think it still stings a little.
Well,
I think it would have to. It's an open wound.
Yeah, in the autumn it weeps.
Gross. It's so
God,
gross.
It's seasonal.
That's
why spring is his season.
He's not part Alec Holland. He's not sprouting flowers in the spring out of it or anything.
But he should get a nice salve on it. I mean, really.
Yeah, some unguents would be recommended.
Some night creams.
Some of that Ponds like we had in one of those early episodes of the show.
Right, yeah, exactly. The thing that we, when we talk about Batman, and I think this is the, this is what includes him. When I'm thinking about why we include these particular characters, when Cole, I try to get into Cole's brain, which is a lot like trying to get into Two-Face's brain, to be completely honest. When you, when
it's like D20's brain.
When you try to get into and see why
no,
these,
it's RNG.
It is. It's completely random. It's completely random. It's like hitting random article on. It's like the I feel lucky button on Google.
Bing, bing, bing.
Why is he included on this list? What's the end game as to why we include him as one of the top tier, the one percenters of Batman's rogues gallery? And I think that, that for me, and I want to know what you guys feel about it, but for me, the reason is when we talk about Batman, what do we always say about Batman? When we were talking about don't mess with the Batmans.
Yeah, you don't mess with the Batmans.
But why don't you? But what do we say about Batman? Batman can do can win any fight given the caveat of what?
It's
preparation.
Yeah.
Thank you, Steve. Definitely preparation. Can you prepare to fight Two-Face?
I think the way that you prepare for Two-Face is to engineer a triplicate of choices. Because nothing so messes with Two-Face as having three paths diverge upon the yellow wood.
Yes. But I think that that's what...
Because he just has to turn around, if the coin will allow it.
Right, but go ahead, Steve.
But I think Andy's on to something here. There's no... It's a random element that you don't know how Two-Face is going to respond.
Right. So when you're Batman and you need to fight Superman, you get out your kryptonite ring, you set your killing field, right? When you're Batman and you're fighting the mutant from Dark Knight Returns, the King Mutant, right?
Yeah.
What was it? This isn't a sewage. This is my surgeon's table. What was the famous line? It's so great. Best line Frank Miller's ever written. You know, when you're Batman and you're fighting, he has, you know, the Babylon storyline, the Rock of Ages, he has contingency plans for everything, right? If Flash goes rogue,
right,
he has the contingency. If Green Lantern goes rogue, he has it. If Wonder Woman goes rogue, he has it. If any supervillain, I mean, the guy fought Darkseid to a standstill and won. Because he had a year and a half or 2 years or however long he posed as Desaad. To torturing people in the guise of the sod to get in front of Darkseid to beat his ass. Like, that's how dedicated to preparation. He's the... who played Lincoln?
Oh, Daniel Day-Lewis.
He's the Daniel Day-Lewis of crime fighters. He's so method. But then
yeah, it's like, you know, Daniel Day-Lewis is lengthy. He's like, you know, when I get started fighting crime, I just get too lazy to stop.
Damn it. So when you get to the point where you're fighting Two-Face, you can't prepare for that. You can set... The only way I think you, and that's what puts him into this tier, is that there is always that element that you cannot plan for. I think the only way that you do that is you trick him into only one choice, right? You put him in a...
You did better than I did with my three choice thing.
But I think the three choice leads you down the road to one choice, right? I think it has to start somewhere. If you make it a binary thing, you don't know what he's going to do. He's going to shoot a school bus. He's going to Johnny Dangerously the thing. You know, it's the
once.
Joe. He's going to Joe Piscopo. It shoots through schools. Like, he's going to do that thing, or he's not. If you give him three choices, you start being able to steer it to one choice, you know, and I think that's the only way, and it's got to be exhausting because it's so outside of it.
I think the only way you can prepare for Two-Face is to never allow yourself to imagine that you're prepared for Two-Face. The greatest mistake you can
make is
buying into the concept that you're ever going to be fully prepared for this man, this character.
Steve, what do you think?
Or you give him a coin that has no scar.
Oh, that's just mean.
Yeah, dude, come on. There are lines.
Or take away his coin.
Yeah.
Or take away the coin. You know, or you throw up a whole bunch of coins like they did in Batman Forever.
Yeah.
You just keep asking him for coin. Give me the coin. And then he has to flip the coin until he gives it to you, right?
In Batman Forever...
That was
like the ultimate jab at the other 99%. Bruce Wayne has so much money, he can just go out and buy up a big stack. Because those two-sided silver dollars are not cheap. They're like $8 or $10 each. And they just bought all of them in 5 novelty stores.
No, he had them made through his 18 shell companies.
He went to the hairspray Hardy Har Hut, bought them out.
Well, it's like, what was it in the Batman Begins where he was making his costume and he had like to have each bat ear made in a different shell company. He had to have both sides of the coins made separately in separate companies and then have them forged together for another company and sent so that no one would ever catch on that he was the one fighting Two-Face.
That's right.
It's really arduous. God, it must be
otherwise,
tough.
People, you know, they get a purchase order from Batman. It's like, yeah, and I'm Wonder Woman.
Right, you gotta...
actually a line that's...
Everything's a reference.
Everything's a reference.
But honestly,
in answer to your question, when we were putting this together, 4 out of 5 just gelled instantly. When this moved from the "let's do a show about the Riddler with Josh" to becoming a full arc because Andy saw into my brain what I didn't see was going on there, and 4 out of 5 were instantaneous. But who was going to be that fifth villain? And I honestly, Two-Face wasn't just jumping out at me, but then again, nobody that was jockeying for that position really stood out until Andy says, well, you know, the other one would be Two-Face. I'm like, well, it makes the titling easy. Coin flip, we're done.
But I think there's a case that Two-Face, I think there's a case to be made that Two-Face is Batman's ultimate arch nemesis. I really believe that when you look at characters like the Joker, or, you know, the Riddler is easy. You know, he's a pain in the ass, and he definitely represents that intellectual side of Batman, but you solve his riddles, you punch him in the face, you throw him in Arkham. Penguin, you know, you follow the money, you get him on Rico, and you throw him in Arkham. Catwoman, you make out with her till she stops stealing stuff for a week. Right? That's kind of always been the Catwoman thing. Like,
yeah,
you convince
you
her...
rehabilitate her with love.
Yeah, you with your batchlong, whatever you do, I don't even know. And then with, you know, with the Joker, you just fall, you have to... And what makes the Joker such an interesting and tasty character is that in order to stop the Joker, you've got to follow the Joker down the rabbit hole, right? But you do that, and then you punch him in the face and you throw him in Arkham until somebody breaks him out, or until he convinces somebody of a way to get out. With Two-Face, that element of surprise, that element of unpredictability, I think makes him a very, very powerful villain in the Batman's rogues gallery. I think it definitely puts him in the 1%, and I would say that alone could make him the arch villain. I don't think he's ever been used, maybe a few times, but not in a big way has he ever been used as to the potential that I think that character has to really put a hurtin' on Batman.
Oh, absolutely.
The way that he should.
And I think that part of this particular story arc, it sort of was born out of a conversation with Josh about the Riddler being one of those characters that I, as a kid, I thought was the stupidest character ever. And then I came to recognize what the character was about. This has been very eye-opening for me as we develop this on this particular character, because second only to the Riddler was Two-Face, as characters that were just sort of, you know, he was sort of the half and half of the Batman pantheon.
Right, right. He
represents
so much.
And now
I begin to
see more than just this circus freak with a number, you know, with a one. With a binary fetish.
Right, right, right. With an elevator fetish. It goes up, it goes down. It's just where it stops that matters. Steve, what are your final thoughts on Two-Face? A sentence I never thought I would utter, but...
my final thoughts on Two-Face...
Damn it, Steve.
Hang on, let me consult the coin.
Right, I was like, who are you asking? Your other face?
During the whole show, I did have a replica Two-Face coin in hand.
It's a character I think, you know, that we didn't see a lot of, I guess, in the Silver Age due to the fact that it felt very limiting. But I think you can see that what the creators in the 70s started doing was opening up and examining more the duality of the character, more so than just the coin flip.
Right.
A lot more... two themed crimes.
Like at the Second National Bank in the movie.
Yes.
Damn it.
Or having two cars diverge in a yellow wood where one is, you know, one is a jalopy and one is a sports car. That sort of thing. I'm a fan of the character. I can see how it might feel limiting for writers, but I really have enjoyed what I've read of him, especially, I think The Long Halloween is his opus.
Yeah, for sure.
And I know that's, and then of course the Dark Victory follow-up, but The Long Halloween, you get to see Harvey Dent as Harvey Dent, and you get to see him struggling with how do the ends justify the means in what I'm doing to take down this crime family. And I think the Batman, the Dark Knight movie really got you to like Harvey Dent as a character before having him, you know, develop into Two-Face. So,
and that's what you need, especially if you're going to try to give the whole story in one movie.
Right.
Right.
And they did a remarkable job of making you absolutely love this guy, and then, oh, by the way, I'm going to go around and maybe or maybe not kill you.
It depends. It's all quote-unquote chance. Well, thank you, Steve, for being on the show tonight. We really appreciate it. You're always a pleasure, and you're always welcome.
And we'll bring you back for our next show, which will be the Bizarro Show.
Ooh.
Because we want to now talk about... I'm suddenly inspired to talk about characters. You don't know what they're thinking.
Me, I'm not inspired. Yes.
Well, so we'll see you there?
I'm not sure.
Can we do an entire show as Bizarro? How confusing would that be? That would be so great.
Well, I will go ahead and link in my article of the Bizarro Solomon Grundy letters.
Nice. Yes, do that.
Because I think that will wrap up nicely with this.
Well, this show. Cole, why don't you plug us up? We'll get out of here. Next week we're coming back with Catwoman, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, indeed, with a Catwoman.
Yeah.
Catherine. Yes. Cat, Houston. Mrs. Jedi Cole will be joining us to talk about Catwoman right here on the Jedi Cole Universe at JediCole.com. You can write to us at JCUmail@yahoo.com. You can... get the occasional tweet on Twitter at the Jedi Cold U if you subscribe to our Twitter there. And be sure and check
the Facebook.
Yes, you can find the Jedi Cult Universe on Facebook, as well as Hey Kids Comics and the Rancor Pit on Facebook as well. And speaking of the Rancor Pit, every other Sunday, the first and third Sunday, actually, of every month, on watchonairlive.com, you can check out myself and Eddie Medina on the Rancor Pit Live. And a couple of days after you hear this, if you're catching it when it first publishes, we will be talking about our experience at Infinicon, talking to Gerald Holm and Dickie Beer, who were an actor and a stunt person in Return of the Jedi, who had amazing tales to tell. So check out Men in Masks on the Rancor Pit Live on Sunday.
There you go. Buy, collect, enjoy your comics, or don't. Get yourself a coin, go into a comic shop, spend about 9 hours just flipping it. Just say, okay, do I want a Founding Thor number 7? Flip it. If it's not, just don't do it. Trust the coin. It's the purest form of comic collecting. Trust the coin.
So if you wind up with DC Comics Flintstones number 2, it's your own fault, not ours.
That's right. It's the coin's fault. It's fate. Fate betrayed you. Thank you so much, guys. Thank you to Steve for coming on the show and being a mensch like always. Just a good guy all around, bringing the thunder tonight. Join us next week for more Hey Kids Comics. Say goodnight, guys.
Good night.
Good night.